King Tut was an Egyptian pharaoh, 1300 years, I guess, B.C., and when he died, he was put in a tomb packed with expensive jewels and rare artifacts. It was discovered in the 1920s, and the people who have been in contact with the tomb and King Tut have had some interesting challenges in their life, so we thought this would be good for our curses show. Ironically, the Museum of Idaho, just over the pass in Idaho Falls, has an exhibit going on through November 24th called Treasures of the Tomb. And we have Brittany from the Museum of Idaho with us right now. How are you, Brittany?
I am doing well today. How are you?
Not bad. We do thank you a lot for your time.
I am happy to be with you on the show today and tell your audiences all about it.
So, have you learned a lot about King Tut? Can you give us a little background about who exactly he was when he was alive?
Yeah, absolutely. If I could put it in one sentence, I would call him the Boy King. You know, he took the throne before he was even 10 years old, and he died around the age of 18 or 19. And for some time, there was speculation as to whether he was murdered or not, because when they looked at the mummy itself, there was a hole in his skull. And so it was speculated for some time that he had been murdered. But after they had done some CT scans or an MRI scan, they found that there was fluid in that hole, and it was actually left from the mummifiers. So we've helped to debunk that myth in the world of archaeology and Egyptology. King Tut's tale is actually a very sordid, very fascinating one. There was a lot of inbreeding in the family. His grandparents were brother and sister. He was married to his stepsister. King Tut had a club foot and a cleft mouth because of this. But, you know, you don't see that in the mummy, whether it's because the mummifiers cut the foot and they didn't want people to know. After all, they believe that Egyptians, in their journey in the afterlife, they would raise like gods. And it's one of the reasons whenever you see Egyptian mummies, they have these caps on their fingers and toes, and they're gold. And it's to signify the representation that when you arise as a god, your skin will be like gold. The reason a lot of the things were done in gold is because the Egyptians knew that gold doesn't decay, it doesn't rust. So, you know, they were very advanced for their time era and the things that they knew. At the Museum of Idaho, we recently had a guest speaker, Bob Breyer. He's a world's leading Egyptologist. He's the foremost expert on mummies. And he is the one that actually recreated the process of mummification, and he was the first person to do it in 2,000 years. And as he described the process and the things he went through, you just couldn't believe the technology and the things that the Egyptians knew in order to make sure the body stayed like that, to preserve it. They used special linens. They even wrote magic spells on the linens that they wrapped the mummies in to ensure that they would be safe. So there's just so many fascinating things. Every single artifact in the museum has a story behind it.
And what kind of jewels, what kind of artifacts were actually packed inside there?
Oh, you could live like a king if you had one piece that was found in his tomb. I mean, there were things ranging from the sarcophagus to jars to these things that would protect you and help you in the afterlife, spices, linens. Everything that was packed in there was to ensure that he could live the same lifestyle that he lived during his time in the afterlife.
How well was the body preserved?
Well, mummies certainly, as what you've seen in the movies, that's really not too far from how mummies look today. As far as preservation, you know, it doesn't have the vital organs because they've taken all of those out. But as far as that brown, decaying skin, yes, it's not too far from accurate, what you've seen in the movies.
So we could move on to the curse now. And I guess when this was found in the 1920s?
Yes, that is correct. It's the discovery of the tomb itself is quite an interesting story in that it is one of those of stick with things and you'll triumph. Howard Carter, he had been sponsored by Lord Carnarvon, and you know, Lord Carnarvon had told him, you know, you're on your last dig, you haven't found anything, I'm pulling the plug. And Howard Carter convinced him to just help him pay for one more season of digging, and it was during that season that he found, it was on November 4th, 1922, they found that first step leading down to King Tut's tomb. And so from there, that's where, beginning the day they found the tomb, that's where all these stories of the curses evolved. A good example of that is when Howard Carter came back for his last dig, he brought with him what they call the golden bird, basically a yellow canary. And it's said that the day they found the tomb, when Howard Carter returned home, his servant told him that a cobra had eaten his bird. And it was a sign that, you know, they shouldn't go into the tomb. Don't do it. So that was the first of many curses to be perpetuated when they found this tomb. But another curse that is strongly associated with King Tut's tomb is the death of Lord Carnarvon. He actually, he died pretty soon after the discovery of the tomb. And, you know, we debunked that myth by, there was actually a mosquito bite on his cheek, and he kept shaving, and it got more and more infected, and that's what they say is what killed him. But as mysteries go and as superstition goes, it was blamed on the discovery of the tomb and it being cursed. They also say that one of their dogs died in relation to the tomb. And the day Lord Carnarvon died, all the power went out in Egypt. And so there are a lot of interesting things that coincided with this discovery, all of which scientists can argue, all of which superstition can say it's all correlated. So I don't think either side is wrong, but it can certainly be explored and further explained.
And when people go over to the Museum of Idaho, what is in your guys' spread? This is all just kind of a replica of what the exact tomb was?
Yes and no. They are indeed replicas of the pieces found in King Tut's tomb. Even the King Tut exhibit touring in Seattle right now doesn't have all of the major pieces. And so in order to get the experience that you would have at the Museum of Idaho, you would have to travel to Egypt. It ranges from what we have in the exhibit, ranges from the shrine to the thrones to the bed that was used to mummify King Tut to a likeness of the sarcophagus to the canopic jars. It's quite an educational experience, not only about King Tut's tomb, but it's about understanding the religion of Egyptians and what did it mean to believe in an afterlife. It's also very insightful about Howard Carter's dig and why was that so significant. I mean, the whole world was affected by this dig. It affected architecture. It affected fashion. So not only do you get a better understanding of who King Tut was and his reign and how did the fact that his father, King Akhenaten, he had quite a political, he was quite the politician that a lot of people really, really disliked what he did. So how did that affect King Tut? You learn about King Tut's personal life and his public life, as well as the afterlife and Howard Carter's dig. So it's a well-rounded exhibit in understanding multiple time frames.
And once again, we've been talking with Brittany from the Museum of Idaho about King Tut, one of our people that made the list for curses for our Halloween show this year. Brittany, we do thank you a lot for your time.
Certainly, and hopefully no curses will come my way for speaking about this.